Welcome to Pacifica Issues Podcast, our take on legal issues in the Pacifica community. We are the co-hosts. My name is Leo Malfosio.
And my name is Ruby Fanaika Fangao. Pacifica Issues Podcast welcomes monthly contributions. Donors will receive special mention in future episodes. We invite sponsors to contact us if they'd like to partner on our future episodes. We also invite listeners to visit our Facebook page, Pacifica Issues Podcast, and comment below each episode to continue the conversation. Feel free to share our episodes on your platforms and help us raise awareness on Pacifica issues. The information provided on this podcast does not and is not intended to constitute legal advice. Listeners should contact their attorney to obtain advice with respect to any particular legal matter. Without further ado, we'll continue our overarching theme of displacement. In this talk, we're continuing the subject of evictions.
Once again, thank you so much for tuning in our talk about evictions. Again, my name is Leo Malfosio. And so when we left off, we were supposed to talk about the process itself, the evictions process, some of the remedies that people can do. The remedy is essentially a legal term for what could be done for these outcomes, what could be a solution to these problems that we're having. And then, of course, we're going to look into some case laws. Case laws are essentially prior cases that have happened in the past where people can look up via any legal resource, and you can use these case laws where these legal issues, if it's the same one that you're facing, you could use those as a rule of law to remedy your problem with landlord-tenant disputes. And so we're going to talk about some case laws, and then we're going to talk about the lack of legal profession within our community. Ruby and I have talked about this for some time now, when she and I first met, we were in law school, and then we organized, we started this first ever Pacific Islanders Student Association in law school, in any ABA law school. And so we're really proud of that. And I think we have more to work on as a community, because that is just the start. Ruby and I have talked about essentially where our community is still lacking to get into law school, getting to accumulate several numbers of attorneys within our community. Other communities, like other communities such as the minorities, the blacks, the Latinos, we're all minorities, but they seem to be moving ahead farther than we are, and so we need to catch up, so to speak, mm-hmm. in terms of getting our people into law school, getting them to practice law, to passing the bars, wherever they're going to practice the law. And then, get them into this field. This field in itself is just, there's a vast majority of laws, practice discipline that you can focus on when you do to practice law. But, even with that, we're just a very small, minute numbers of Pacific Islander community. When I say Islander, we're talking about Pacific Islanders, the Polynesian, Micronesian, and the Melanesian community. So we're very underrepresented in the legal profession. Ruby and I have talked about this so many times, and it's ridiculous to understand and to know that we are now in the year 2020, and we still have the same number of attorneys. Me living here in American Samoa, I just returned back to our homeland here in American Samoa. I'm seeing that, I'm looking at the Attorney General's office where there's majority are Palangis, outsiders working within the Attorney General's office. And then you're looking at the Public Defender's office where there's none, there's no Samoans working within that office. I'm not saying that it's a bad thing, but we need to have our people working within these offices so we can have a sort of comfortable feeling knowing that we have this backing in terms of legal backing within our community in case something were to happen. So that's where we're at. So we're going to talk about those issues, the lack of legal representation within our community, and then we're going to try to have a review of the previous talk in this talk. And so once again, thanks for tuning in.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think us connecting the dots of why this should be important to the community, not just to the individual who the eviction happens to, and not just to the family who the eviction happens to, but to the Pacific Islander community, it's alarming, this topic of evictions. Because a lot of times it's happening and we don't know our rights, we don't know our remedies, we don't know our options. But we're going to talk it out as an opportunity for us to share knowledge and also to problem solve.
Right. So, if from our perspective as Pacific Islanders, because, one thing we got to look at where, the states that are congregated by mostly Pacific Islanders. So I'm looking at the states of California, I'm looking at the state of Hawaii, I'm looking at the state of Utah, I'm looking at the state of Washington, and what would there be another state? So these are some of the major states that were, there's a lot of Pacific Islander community.
Right. There's also representation in Texas and Nevada and Arizona. Okay. We have some members there.
Right. So the numbers are there, especially with the states that I mentioned earlier.
Right.
The problem is that we're facing as a community is that, as you all know, that our community is very fast in terms of criticizing someone when someone is being evicted or someone, it's just not just being evicted from any apartment or house or whatnot, but just any problem in general that would bring attention to our community. Unwanted attention is what I'm talking about to our community, because our community feels like we don't need that kind of problem within our community. So we don't want to talk about it. We might as well not talk about it because it's so embarrassing. So this talk is primarily essentially to not avoid this, but we need to talk about it because there are real families that are dealing with issues like this. And this is a very, very critical issue.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about when someone is being evicted, it's a family issue. And so we're seeing a lot of, families being separated from their loved ones, like their kids and whatnot, because they couldn't afford to live in an apartment. So, the social service has to come in, and then, all these government entities have to come in and intervene. We as the community need to firstly intervene with these kinds of problems. So essentially our community, let's just flat out, we don't have enough attorneys to deal with these kinds of problems. I have lived in the state of California. I've lived in the state of Hawaii. I've also lived in the state of Washington. And California is... this is sort of like the norm for some people in California, where when they're evicted and then they go to court and then they fight it out in court. The only problem in court is, I know a lot of families are listening into this. Once a Pacific Islander finds out, like receives a notice from the landlord saying that he or she's being evicted, they panic, right? And so because they don't know where to turn to. They don't know these processes. They don't know what to do. And Ruby and I have talked about this. It would be nice to have a Pacific Islander, sort of like a virtual law firm where people of Pacific Islander descent can tune in and maybe get help from that. And my understanding in California is that when you're being evicted, they have these offices, just like here in American Samoa, and I'm sure some of the other territories in the U.S., we have the legal aid. And, of course, these legal, entities, not well funded, right? And so they're getting these attorneys that are, essentially way past their prime, so to speak. They're ready to retire, and they don't want to deal with, they don't have, quote unquote, a lot of fight in them. So these are some of the places where they go to and work for. And a lot of times, when they receive cases, they don't want to face it. I mean, they either want to settle it, or they just don't want to take the case. So they foresee something that's going to take up most of their time, and say they don't want to pursue it. And they get cases and cases on a daily basis. And I'm assuming that in the state of California, such as California, they're getting hundreds, maybe even thousands of cases at their office. So they don't have the time to deal with all this. I remember a certain period in California where I've seen a family went through this. It's a very sad situation. It's very devastating when you have little kids that are involved and they're being evicted. They don't know what to do. They get kicked out. They give them 3 days notice. They try to remedy this with the landlord. The landlord says, nope, you got to move out in 3 days. What are you going to do now? Right? So these families they start to panic. They call their family members. Sometimes they don't even want to call their family members because they're so embarrassed of what had happened. They lose their house. They don't want to call family members for some kind of money to help out. But the truth is, there is help out there. But help is not enough. We need to do more. Like I mentioned about these legal aid offices, they can only do so much because they get a multitude of cases. A lot of people have, such as the state of California. I don't know about the other states, but California in itself, they deal with a lot of cases like this. It's, they don't have a lot of time to help out these people. Our talk is, essentially about that, to bring awareness to our community and to help find a solution to this problem.
No, I thank you, Broke, for bringing it down to a human level because the word eviction, sometimes Americans treat it surgically where it's like, oh, it's just a proceeding. And without putting a face to the tenants and without putting a face to the aftermath, for instance, separated families, sometimes they go into the system if the parents can't stay. For instance, they have to stay in their car with their children. The government's right. Not going to allow that. Or if it's not the government that steps in, sometimes the children go with another relative. But either way, families are separated and scared. I mean, it's very, not only is it frightening for able-bodied adults, it's even more frightening for our elderly who have to face evictions and the children.
Oh my gosh, yes.
The children that have to face evictions, it's very frightening.
Yes. This is, yeah, you're absolutely right, sis. I mean, to some people, yeah, this is a norm for them. For Pacific Islanders, we're so used to, we come from a community that everyone is family. If you need help, they're not just going to simply help you halfway. They do it wholeheartedly. If a Pacific Islander helps you out, they want to make sure that you are being fully helped. Not this, if you get evicted, you get like, oh, it's like what Ruby said, it's, to them, it's just a proceeding. And then, when they say proceeding, it's not like it's going to happen today and then that's it. No, we're talking about it's a process. These process takes forever. And while you're going through this process, you are without a home. And so that makes it even more devastating when you have, the elderly community and you have little kids involved in this. This is, it becomes more frightening.
Mm-hmm.
And so
Yeah, and this is a culture clash because, as you mentioned, bro, this is new to us. Evictions is new to us in a way because a lot of us are first or second generation American, meaning that back home we're coming from our father's land. You are not evicted from your father's land, essentially. And so we're property owners, we're land owners back home. But here in America, when you are renting, you are in a temporary living situation, even if you're there for years. The reality is it's temporary in that someone can evict you for either failure to pay or for what's considered bad behavior, like, for instance, abusing property. And so I think kind of humanizing these issues are important so that we can connect the dots because it is true. It is a proceeding, but it's not only a proceeding, you know, it's devastating for the tenants, who are being evicted. It's devastating. And quite often we are the tenants. Quite often we are not the property owner. We're not the landlord. We're sitting in the position of the tenant. So just to circle back to the beginning of our talk, I just wanted to remind listeners that in this whole talk, the eviction process is actually a landlord remedy. So it may not feel like it when it's happening to you to receive the notice of eviction. It doesn't feel like a remedy for anyone, but it's a remedy for the property owner. And that starts off. The story actually starts earlier than that. There's problems beforehand, but that starts the story of the courts, where the courts get involved. And the landlord must go through the court, because if they try to force you out without the court, then that's an illegal eviction. So the eviction process is required to go through the court. So the landlord can't just carry you out with your things and your family and put you outside. Right. But even with the court system and even with the court system entering in, there's, you know, sometimes we can have an attitude of, or some people in our community can have an attitude of compliance where we think, okay, it's a proceeding, it's lawful, evictions are lawful, therefore it is completely justified and I have no rights. Therefore, you know, it's happening to me through the court. Therefore, that means I have no remedies. And that's not the case. That's simply not the case because, as Laoma mentioned, you do have rights, you do have remedies. We'll go into why it's inadequate because ultimately we all end up at the same conclusion at most of these talks, which is lack of resources and lack of Pacifica lawyers and lack of Pacifica Law Center and lack of, you know, all these things that help other people. We do not have for ourselves.
Right. So can you fight back? Yes. Yes, you can. It's a process, and that's just essentially the problem. We just aren't equipped with this kind of knowledge. You know, that's part of the reason why we created that organization involved in law school. We need more attorneys. I don't think I can emphasize that enough. And even in the year 2020, we are still dealing with the same numbers. And so we still lack the representation, legal representation in our community. And that's just a major problem. And I think we're easily a target for these landlords because of that.
Yeah.
You know, because they know we don't have attorneys within our community. Let's just kick him out. What's his last name? Is someone last name? I tell you what. He probably doesn't have an attorney in their office. He probably doesn't know what's going on. So what do we do? Just send him a note, like a 3 days notice, just to scare him off. He'll probably leave the property. You know, what do? We just leave the property without even asking them what's going on. Mm-hmm. We have, I think we're at a time where people are more starting to learn more, you know, of course, with the social media, we have, you know, essentially sources out there. There's a lot of resources out there that, you know, we shouldn't be ignorant of the fact that there are problems that we can deal with ourselves. We just got to search for it. And we need to come together as a community and fight back.
And so, resources including checking your county and your state government websites for self-help information and forms, but you'll still need the guidance for appropriate forms and likely e-filing during quarantine. So it returns back to the conclusion that we need more Pacifica lawyers, because the guidance, most likely if you go through those forms, you'll probably be referred to your legal aid. And as Leoma had explained, you know, a lot of times that's not adequate guidance and adequate direction. And so going through those, you know, you can go and check yourself through your county or your state government court website. Those forms, some of the forms, sometimes the form for the state is not the correct form for the county. It's a general form. And so what can happen is you can submit the wrong form. Depending on the clerk, it could be rejected. And right, that wastes more time. Whereas an attorney who most of us cannot afford. So whereas an attorney would step in and save you the time and the headache of submitting the wrong form earlier. It's really unfortunate that this is also an economic issue, because not only do we not have bargaining power as tenant compared to the landlord, we also don't have bargaining power at the court as tenant representing self versus a landlord who often, you know, a property owner, sometimes you're taking that rent and now they have an attorney. And it's, I'm not making a loaded statement. I'm speaking common sense that quite often property owner has the extra funds and the extra funds goes to the extra help. You don't have property, quite often you don't have extra funds, you don't have the resources. It's not a depressing reality for us to feel sad. You know, what we're talking about, you know, knowledge is power. So we're talking about the reality of the situation as to empower our community. And any young minds that may be listening and want to, you know, participate in the problem solving, we need more Pacifica law students. You know, it'd be nice to have accessibility to Pacifica lawyers. Those who are out there, it'd be nice to have access to them. And who are our pro bono attorneys? There are pro bono attorneys in the community in general, but who has the cultural sensitivity to work with, you know, sometimes there's an ailing parent. A lot of our homes come with built-in generations, an ailing parent, children, and a parent, but there's vulnerability in those generations. And I think when you have insight, I think you're able to strategize a lot differently than when you come from a community that does not go through the same experiences.
Right. Yeah, that's you bring up a really good point on that one. You know, so most of the time these landlords, they're part of an organization. So essentially, you're just fighting a big giant of these landlords. Are part of an organization that they too will come and will ally and fight against you. For instance, when I remember helping out this lady when she was in California, and you know, it's just it's so fast how they do it too. Because of that, they have the advantage of the resources that they have, and you know, they have a lot of money to do this. And they know what they're doing, and they know that who they're trying to get out of their property do not have the means to do so. And so that's what we're actually fighting against. These landlords are part of organizations that are well off, and they could easily pay for you to death, and, you know, just because of the resources that they have.
That's a very good point. For tenant remedies, so the eviction is the landlord's remedy. but the but your remedies as a tenant, you can fight back as far as filing a response, whether it's an answer or a response that claiming that it was defective on the landlord's part. Was the notice defective? Was the complaint defective? Was a service of complaint defective? And you have to send a copy of the response to the landlord. Or another option is countersuit. The landlord's lawsuit against you is the eviction. What is your countersuit, if applicable, against the landlord? Because if you do have a claim, say for instance, the landlord did not maintain the property, you know, it's uninhabitable, you know, so that you would either claim damages or in some instances, not necessarily pertaining to that claim, would win an injunction. There's also affirmative defenses where the landlord, you know, the defense, affirmative defenses for the tenant asking, you would ask yourself, did the landlord attempt to force you out without the court, without the eviction lawsuit, because that's unlawful? Was there lack of notice? If yes, that was unlawful. Did the tenant pay in full did the tenant pay in full within the time of the notice? Because if you're still being evicted after that fact, then that's unlawful. Another point is, was the landlord not maintaining the unit? And as Bro had mentioned, there's case law and case law which can help you as the tenant, because you're searching for precedent, and which Bro explained is a rule established in a previous legal case that is binding or persuasive to the court in deciding your case. For example, unlawful detainer cases are helpful for case law when you're having to prepare your own case, essentially. And statutes, you would check with your state statutes to see the codified laws, but you can hear all the work that's done when you're a tenant who, say for instance, you were not able to afford rent, you likely cannot afford an attorney to do all of that work. So now you have this added pressure to build your own case. Sometimes the tenant is still in possession of the home, even though they've received the eviction and now they're duking it out in court. And so you're having to continue to go to work to pay bills and prepare this case, which as you can hear is not, it's not straightforward because there's moving parts to it. We end up back at, you know, lack of resources and needing support for our community.
Wow. I mean, you know, I'm so happy that you brought that up, especially the process of how to do it and how you can, you know, essentially fight back. You know, going back to this lady that I helped out in California, where, so you get this notice from the landlord. You can try to, and Ruby has brought up a lot of things you could do. Just wanted to add on top of what she had already said. So you can actually try to talk to the landlord, and maybe that's one option.
That's the first option.
That's the very first option when, you know, because we panic when we get these notices. You're like, oh gosh, what am I going to do, right? And, you know, rest assured, you can go talk to the landlord, you know, go talk to the landlord and tell her the story. Like, hey, I mean, I can't afford to make this payment right now, but could we do this? And not bring it up to court. Maybe you could you withdraw your complaint that you filed in court? You know, most of the time they do. I mean, they're happy to talk to you and they try to work it out because they know that these lawsuits cost money. And on the flip side too, they're part of an organization where they probably are not paying for anything. It's part of their, they pay these monthly fees to these organizations that have law firms that would come in and fight for them. So they don't, you know, a lot of times people deal with that, like, oh, it's out of our hands. We can't deal with it. Our attorney's dealing with it right now. So they have that luxury of saying that because now they can just return back to doing their job and let the attorney handle it. Hmm. Whereas you as a tenant, you're working to try to provide for your family and you're trying to do this at the same time, which is, You know, it's very overwhelming for some people when they do it because it takes a lot of time to do it. So you can try to talk to your landlord. Landlord probably going to be like, okay, we can try to resolve this. I'll withdraw my complaint. But if, say, for instance, she gives you an unreasonable remedy or just say that, well, can you pay such and such amount like next week? And then your answer would be like, well, I've got to feed, you know, you've got stuff to do to pay for your, use your money on. And you can't, you don't agree with that. What you could do is to file a complaint. They file a complaint and then you file an answer, right? Like what Ruby had said. An answer is essentially, you know, answering all the complaints that they're filing, they're listing on their complaint. You go to the library and do that research. You can go to the legal aid. Legal aid will help you do that. Ruby had talked about the affirmative defenses. List all the affirmative defenses. Affirmative defenses are essentially defenses that have already been ruled on. If such and such defense is part of your answer, mm-hmm. and if it sticks, it could help out your case. For instance, if, you know, like what Ruby had said, like the notice, defective service, and then this breach of
implied warranty of habitability.
This breach of implied warranty of habitability, if you find something where, you know, there's all issues that relate to that, if there's a toxic, if your gas is leaking, you can't move out if your gas is leaking. And if the landlord, if you give them ample notice, if you give them enough notice to say that, hey, can you come and fix this? And he still hasn't done anything and he ends up evicting you, that's not right. So there's several things you can do. Others, you know, another thing could be like the carpet. If your carpet is not fixed or if it smells or if it, you know, if it's not habitable, quote unquote, then you do have a right to stay in that apartment and have the landlord fix it. And you're not supposed to move out. So these are some of the issues. You can do all this research at the legal aid. They'll provide this information for you, or you can do it at the law library. They'll point out all the resources for you. But the problem is you're going to be doing all this work. Whereas yes. the landlord, he's just doing his work and let the attorneys do it.
Yes.
That's the problem. That's the issue that you're fighting against. You don't have yes. the luxury. You don't have the time to do all this crap.
Right.
Excuse the language.
Even with legal aid, they're limited. And the law library. So the law library can be considered more limited than the legal aid because quite often the librarian will need you to know the terms up front. Before they tell you where to get the book. But most of us would not know the terms.
And that's another boundary that you're going to be facing when you go do all these researches at the law library, is that you have to know what you're supposed to do, what you're doing. Fortunately for me and Ruby, we could do these type searches because this is what we did in law school. Mm-hmm. There's several databases that you can use to search for the legal issues and whatnot, relevant cases. You know, all the information that pertains to your issue.
It's not intuitive.
Right. It's not. And we just don't have the luxury of time and money to do it. And let's say, for instance, you win on that level. And then you can't appeal. I think most of these legal aid resources, they can only help you out as far as the trial court level. If you appeal the case, they won't help you at the appellate level. So you're on your own on that one. You're going to have to find an attorney or a lawyer on your own.
It's a long fight on your own.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
And it's a long fight with an attorney, but it's an even longer fight on your own because you're having to deal with the knowledge gap. Between, like, for instance, claims, how would you know what claims to make if you have not gone to law school? And yes, you know, maybe you can check in with your friend who's a paralegal and all those other things, but you're risking it when you're going that route. And people are limited on their time.
Right. We just don't have the luxury to do it. I mean, 100% of these, the things... You know, when these happen, these types of situations happen within our community, you know, the dad is usually working, the only provider for the family. And in some cases, you know, both parents are working. And now they got to deal with this crap that's added on top of their table. I mean, on their list of things to do that is probably going to consume most of their time. But, you know, what eventually ends up happening is that we avoid it. We just, let's get the hell out of here. Just, you know, give them back the property. And then even that too, it's just the moving part of it. It's just a lot of work. You got to move your stuff. You got to, you know, find another apartment. It's not like, and that's just another issue on top of this. You know, when even that one too, you're trying to find an apartment that's going to probably be, you know, it doesn't mean like you're, when you get evicted or when you're in the process of getting evicted, you're not going to find an apartment within a week or two. It takes more than, I would say, what do you think, Ruby? It takes, I think, a month to find an apartment.
I think it takes longer. Yeah. And especially if you're in Northern California, I think it takes longer. And who knows what's happening in quarantine? I know that there was a new law that allowed like a type of, not a forgiveness, but additional time for tenants who didn't have, because they were affected by COVID and quarantine, they were limited in making profit and earning enough income to pay. But those who did not meet that criteria, it's going to be longer to find a home. And the stigma.
And if you're living in a, if you're living in a state like Minnesota, pure Pacific Islander, you don't have any families to kind of move in and buy some more time.
Right.
You are basically, So that's, that's what we're dealing with as a community.
Well, it highlights our lack of resources and the need to support our community, because these, what the resources we do have are not adequate. For instance, with legal aid, I tried to brainstorm, okay, legal aid, that is helpful in its, on paper. Legal aid is helpful on paper. And I am grateful it is a resource, but it being adequate to meet the needs of our community, I can't say yes, because for instance, there's no interpreters for our native languages, which is often important. If the breadwinner, the tenant, does not speak English as their first language, there's another gap in communication. Mm-hmm. And so another is that legal aid is very limited and understaffed. So then that's our resource, is to go to a place that's very limited and understaffed. And another issue with legal aid is little to no sympathy. You know, I've had family that had to go through the process of legal aid, and yes, we're grateful. We're a grateful people. We're a grateful community. I come from a grateful family, but there was little to no sympathy. And so I guess, yes, we're grateful for the bare minimum. Eviction is more than a legal proceeding. When you're facing homelessness, you know, it's when you're facing the idea that you may have to sleep out there in the cold, in the ice cold, if you're in Northern California, dealing with little to no sympathy is very, it's very deathly, because it's kind of ice cold on top of ice cold.
Right. And
also I would consider legal aid as a last resort. I know that they want it to be our first resort, and maybe it is for lower income families. But when it comes to trying to keep homelessness away, you know,
they're not doing nothing.
We need some more care than that. And so that's why Leoma and I, we push this every episode. You guys hear us say the same thing over and over again, which is we need more Pacifica lawyers. We need more Samoan lawyers, more Tongan, more Fijian, more Chamorro. And so we need more representation. But the issue with attorneys, and quite often we're not included, but the issue with attorneys are that they're expensive. How many people can afford an attorney if they can't afford their rent? Another thing is, yes, there's a such thing as pro bono, where the attorneys do not charge their clients because they're part of a program, a pro bono program, which waives the costs. But quite often they are not covering the issues pertaining to us. And again, they're limited. They're limited in staff. So it's not really a viable option. And then, you know, the attorneys, sticking to attorneys and us not having adequate representation, It's a reoccurring topic that Leoma and I keep talking about. We lack accessible Pacifica lawyers. We lack a center for Pacifica lawyers. We need more scholarships for Pacifica law students. You know, all of this comes back to the next topic we cover. We'll probably end up at the same conclusion. And so it's a real call of action to our community. You know, any young listeners listening, consider going into law school because you would be doing a great service to us. You know, those in law school, continue fighting, because even though you may feel like the teachers are against you or you may feel like the admin is against you, your community, us, we still need you. You will be a big service to, you will deliver a big service to us. And even just with inspiration and mentoring, you know, it's inspiring to learn about, like Leoma always says, your success is our success. You know, we are excited to see our community rise. And while we have some success here and there, we need more success in the legal community. We need to build our legal community. We need to build our medicine community, our banking community. Those are important. Those are economic solutions to these big issues. Like preventing homelessness is an economic issue.
Mm-hmm. Drug problem and all that. We really do need that type of care for these legal aid services, because yes, they do want us to come to them for help, but are they really providing the type of kind of help that we need? Probably not. I think these organizations too have their own agenda, which is to, you know, they need this, the numbers, you know, to get their funding. But they're not really essentially doing anything to help out the community. I learned this from, you know, helping out several families in California to try to, you know, fight the landlords that they were dealing with. And that seems to be the occurring theme, that, you know, that they're not really providing the kind of help and support that our people need.
So just to wrap up our talk on this section of evictions, the pros and cons of the eviction process and tenant remedies. So yes, it's a pro for the landlord. It's good for the landlord. The evictions process is good for the property owner, the evictions process. But there are issues that we have with this whole proceeding, because it's the remedies for tenants are deficient. They're deficient for our community. And quite often it's ruthless and unforgiving. You know, if you're going through a proceeding, you're having to face the proceeding with the landlord or homelessness, you know, this is an emergency issue. Also, could there be abuse? Could there be abuse by the property owner? You know, as far as, you know, what's not often mentioned is sometimes the landlord is being unfair. I know that it's hard to imagine, and I'm speaking, I know that we're not a monolith. So I understand that we don't do everything together and think, you know, all alike. But some people in our community have issues with compliance, meaning being too obedient. And so when there's a legal proceeding, if you get an envelope that says you're being sued, there's a temptation to think automatically that you are wrong and they are right. And so what can go out the window, which is important to your case, is could there be abuse from the property owner, from the landlord, you know, for whatever reason, whether or sexual harassment or. And it's not to plant ideas into your head, but just to remind you that you too, the listener, are valuable. And so when we say fight back, we're not saying be unfair to the landlord. We're just saying remember your value. Remember you don't deserve to be homeless, and you do have a right to quote unquote fight back, you know, through lawful means, but also through working with the community with all the solutions we've been proposing. Another just reinforcement is this is a money economics game. We are lacking, quite often us tenants are lacking bargaining power. and we have no adequate resources. And essentially, this is a class issue. It's a drastic impact on families' safety and security. You know, mm-hmm. these are reasons why we come to this country, and to lose them, you know, that's not what, you know, why we came to this, to America for. And so these vulnerable positions, it's, this whole talk is just to drive the point home that you are, if you are a tenant and you're in the position of, you know, being facing an eviction lawsuit, you do have rights. There are remedies. You know, we do mm-hmm. hope to develop more. We hope to develop more options and obtain more Pacifica lawyers to be of service. But you do right. have a right to fight back. You are deserving.
Yes, you are. Thank you for that, Ruby. You know, I can't say this enough. But I think we just need a lot of resources. And you know, the fact of the matter is, we're just underrepresented in the legal profession, and that's just the bottom line. Yes. That's where all these problems are, you know, evolving within our community.
Yes. Exactly.
Yes.
In fact, you nailed that point home, because the lawyer will know not just obtain the economic resources through knowledge, but also steps for the legal proceeding.
Mm-hmm.
Homelessness for some people with knowledge, there are some people with knowledge and resources that are in the same position as tenants facing evictions, and they have a very different outcome. That homelessness is not an option. Because of their resources, they are able to say, for instance, it's an affluent young tenant. So the family's rich, even if the tenant's not. That family's not going to let them get kicked out. Which is what we call it. We call it kicked out, these evictions. You know, they're going to hire their family attorney to get the resources and the knowledge and the options to go through those proceedings lawfully. But the options that we wouldn't know of, we wouldn't know of without experienced attorneys, without our developed attorney community. And it's not to be sneaky. It's just to be productive. You know, facing homelessness is not productive. Yeah. It's unfortunately the work falls back on the tenant who's listening to either speak to their legal aid or hire an attorney, because that would be legal advice, which we are not giving in our show. We're analysts, and we're analyzing these issues.
Right. Again, like what Ruby said, you know, getting into law school was very, very important. You know, this is, you know, that's just a whole separate issue too, is to try and get into law school. But, you know, there will come a time when I do have my own podcast, and these are some of the issues that I will be talking about in terms of admission into law school. What is the political agenda behind the admissions into law school and so forth. You know, there's a lot of work that needs to be done to help out our community. We're just only doing our part. Hopefully by next time we're going to try to have an attorney, a licensed attorney in our with our, you know, in our talk, so we can have a perspective from them. I work with attorneys here in American Samoa, and that's the problem. And I was telling Ruby that we have zero representation in the public defender's office, and we have not enough representation at the Attorney General's office. So that's kind of what we're dealing with. This is the year 2020, and we're dealing with the same problem. Yeah, if someone were to tell you that, you know, there is enough attorney in this world, don't believe that. Mm. They're probably talking about, you know, attorneys that they have. Because you got to remember, we're only dealing with the surface of the issues, the legal issues that our community is dealing with. You're not dealing with issues such as identity theft. You're not dealing with issues that relates to the advancement in technology that we have, issues such as intellectual property related issues. You're not dealing with it. Issues such as hacking into your account and so forth. You know, these are very basic issues that our community is dealing with. And what's frightening is that we don't have the resources to fight just the basics of the legal arena. And, you know, like what Ruby said, we want to encourage you, if you're in law school, stay in there and please help out our community. And I think we have some Pacific Islanders in law school, and when they do come out, the ones that are attorneys right now, they will be nearing the age of retirement, nearing the age of, that type of, so they come and replace these old attorneys. We don't have that luxury where we can turn around and say, we have hundreds of Samoan attorneys. No, we don't.
Exactly.
We don't. We just have enough to make the world go round, quote unquote, if you know what I mean.
Right.
But we just don't have enough to say like, oh, he's available. Why don't you reach out to him? No, we don't. You just don't have that luxury.
Yeah. When someone's rebuking or discouraging us and saying there's enough attorneys, with the hint for us to give up the law, whether it's me or anyone else, because there's a motive when that person's saying that. Another thing is they're talking their story. That's not our story. As Bro was explaining, our story is the minimal representation. We don't have the representation in these gatekeeping careers and positions. And so being tricked into giving up is short-sighted, and being tricked into giving up, it's to serve someone else's agenda, not our agenda. Our agenda is to rise, is to be prosperous, is to be helpers. But the idea, but when others say that, it's so funny when others make loaded statements like that. It's with the hidden agenda, get us to give up. And some men partially maybe jealousy, because some people who say that they're people who were rejected. You know, some people who say that, whether American or not, they were rejected, and now they're attempting to stop someone else's dream, which is not just unfortunate, it's terrible.
Right. Yeah. Just try not to have other people project their fears onto you. It's not it's not a good thing. I think we all have the potential to become great attorneys. Like I said, I work with attorneys here in American Samoa, and even before I came here, I've worked with several attorneys. My story is, I felt like when I was done with grad school, when I was 23 years old, that was my prime. And I was ready for law school then. And so, this is right now where, I'm nearing an age where, I don't have the that sort of the youth behind me anymore. But, I still have that fight within me.
Well, you're still young, bro.
Oh, thank you.
We're still young. I'm right behind you. I'm telling you that so I can tell myself that we're still young. We're not as young as the young people.
Yeah, I totally not as snappy, that. Not as, I don't have that thing anymore. But, we still have that fire in us. I mean, that's why we're still doing this. We want to encourage a lot of young people out there. If your dream is to become an attorney, you have the right dream. There are a lot of opportunities out there. There's, don't just aim for just any school, just the targeted school that you want. Aim for all the schools, because you do have the potential. You do have what it takes to finish anything. So we don't, you know, even with that too, we just don't have, we need a lot of role models within our community. I think that's part of the reason why we don't, we look around and we see that, oh my gosh, we have no attorneys in our community. So what does that tell you? That means we can't become attorneys because we just don't have that potential. We don't see it. Unless we see it, then we'll pursue it. But as far as we know, who, you know, we don't have a lot of attorneys. Yeah. It's the same kind of mentality that we're seeing with our people pursuing football. We're looking around and there's a lot of Samoans and Pacific Island Polynesians in the NFL and due to our community. It motivates our younger generation to strive for that. And that's why there's a lot of people that Polynesians are doing good in colleges, because this is, they see it as a reality. Do they see becoming a lawyer as a reality? Probably not, because they don't see it on a daily basis. It's not around. And we're here to tell you, yes, we do have that potential. There's a lot of things that needs to be done. You know, we're going to talk about several issues, but this is just the tip of the iceberg that we're trying to sort of dissect, you know, this issue right now. In the future, we're going to talk about issues relating to, you know, the political status of American Samoa, you know, here in the Pacific. What are some of the legal issues that our Pacific Islands are dealing with and potentially could be dealing with in the future? So once again, we want to, you know, thank you for listening in. I'm sure, you know, I want to thank my co-host, Ruby, for this talk. And I think it's an amazing talk. We discussed a lot of topics relating to landlord and tenant disputes. There's a lot of resource out there. You can do your own research on your own, but once again, it's, you know, it just takes a lot of time to do it. We hope that, you know, within a few years or so, we're going to have more attorneys finishing law school, passing their bar exams, and then get out there and work. Make sure you remember our community and what, you know, the kinds of issues that we're facing. You want to, you know, work together as a community to fight these problems. Still tune in. We got more topics to discuss in the near future. And I know Ruby wanted to add something else too.
Absolutely. So thank you, Laoma Alefosio. Thank you so much for bringing your knowledge and your experience and your research. And thank you, listeners, as well, for joining us on this journey of analyzing legal issues for our Pacifica community. My name is Ruby Fanaika Fangao, and we look forward to talking to you some more. Join us on Facebook as well. We have a Facebook page if you'd like to say hi or share your opinions.
Yes, absolutely. All right. Thank you.